Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Toronto, proud to announce from Zurich, Men's League Switzerland, U.S. program, Austin Matthews.
To the penalty box, Nylander gets an extra shift. William Nylander shoots, he scores! Coach Clayton Hodgson, the kid has his first National Hockey League goal.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Tip of the Tower Toronto Maple Leafs podcast. Joining me, as always, is David Morisuti and Jake Middleton. Guys, Leafs, 3-1 victory, 2 points behind the Senators. Looks to be playoffs on the horizon. I know, Jake, you're not the biggest fan of analytics and numbers and projections, but hey, roughly 92% chance they're going to make the playoffs now. Thoughts on this, guys?
I like those numbers. I don't like some
Oh, you like numbers now. Okay.
I like those numbers. I don't like the one that, like, Martin Veritsin has a 58% Corsi percentage. He's better than Erik Karlsson. Like, I don't believe in that garbage. But I like those. I like those percentages. Those sound good to me.
And I know Dave likes 3-1 Leafs. Simplified here a little bit.
Yeah, no, it works out. Special teams was big tonight, that's for sure.
Special teams have been big the entire season. I think that's been obviously one of the main points of emphasis throughout the entire year, where you look at their turnaround from shorthanded, power play, like just all around. It's just been a remarkable turnaround for them. They kind of go too deep, too. They don't just necessarily have one power play unit. They have two now. It's quite remarkable.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. I mean, you look at guys who have played well in the power play. You got, you know, Nylander, Bozak, Kadri's done well. Like, they're a much deeper team when it comes to special teams. And their offense is just loaded right now. So it's a good thing going into the playoffs to have that depth with two power play units that can go. The penalty kill is going to get tested a lot more. It's going to get a lot more gruesome with the shot blocking, but it looks like they're going to be able to hold their own for once. I mean, they've had a tough stretch the last couple of years when it comes to special teams. So it's much. I mean, like, think about it. They're top. I think they're one of the best road penalty killing teams, and they're second overall in power play percentage. So. It's a big improvement under Babcock, that's for sure.
For me, the big thing was that, you know, before the season, we wanted to have, you know, a combined PK and power play over 100%. That's generally what you consider a good team. And right now, I'm pretty sure they're fourth in the league at 105.7%. I'm pretty sure they have the best power play in the league, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe Buffalo or Pittsburgh has a higher power play, but they're right up
trade spots. Yeah, they're yeah. Buffalo trade spots each night. It depends
and
on.
They're also in the top 10 in penalty kill, and I mean it's been a real that's been the biggest difference for me in terms of special teams. You know, last year they were like kind of middle of the road, but just the fact that they're getting shorthanded goals. Like that goal from Hyman, I know I hate on Hyman all the time, but that goal he had against the Florida Panthers to basically essentially win the game was so big, and that's the big difference. I don't think they had one shorthanded goal last year, and that goal pretty much just took the sails out of Florida because they were pushing and McElhaney was making some real big saves, and if they didn't score that goal, I feel like they would have broken through and tied it. So. I mean, just the fact that they're been able to get this type of production out of their penalty kill and power play is huge.
So just to help you with that, Jake, they're ninth overall in penalty kill with 82.8%, so 83%. And then power play, they are second behind Buffalo at 23.9%.
So top 10 in both. That's incredible turnaround from where they were last year. I mean, it's just incredible when you hear stats like that, like – what was their power play percentage last season? I mean, I can't think. It would have to be in like the 14 or 15% range. And right now they're operating at, I believe it's about 23% on the power play. They were 15% last season, and they're almost a 10% better opportunity of scoring goals on the power play. That's got to be like a historic, borderline historic rise.
They're second last season with 15.4% on the power play. And their penalty kill, they were 13th overall at 81.6.
Yeah, that's – I mean, overall, as I said, the thing you basically want to have is over 100%. Last year they didn't have it. Now they have it. It's about 10 points higher. Last year, 97%. This year, about 107. So, I mean, that's huge.
Well, before we talk about the PK, what's been the difference on the power play from 1 year to now? What's been the biggest difference?
Talent. 100% talent. Oh, yeah. There's nothing else. I mean, you look at the guys that were running the half wall last year. You got P.A. Parenteau. Like, there's a difference between P.A. Parenteau and William Nylander. I mean, just this skill that they have that they can throw over the boards to have a power play. They have guys that they probably have legitimately 10 forwards that I would have no problem being on the power play. Whether it be, you know, guys as low in the depth chart as Brian Boyle, I have no problem with him as a screener. That's what Babcock's been using him as late in games.
He's massive.
I appreciate that. He's a guy that will stand in front of the net. You know, maybe he can tip it, but he just takes away the vision of the goalie, and that's the main thing you want to do. But, you know, guys that can handle the puck on the power play, you got Brown, you got Kadri, Nylander, Matthews, Marner, you know, I would even like Kasperi Kapanen, who was recently called up beyond the power play because of that shot he has. And it's just incredible how all these players are homegrown, and it just goes to show how big drafting and developing is, because this might be the greatest rookie class ever in the history of the league.
Make a good case for that.
I mean,
Kapanen we're going to get into a little bit later. But, Dave, I got a question for you. Frederick Anderson has been sensational this season. He's 7-1-2 in March with a .939 save percentage. Has there been a more important player to the Leafs penalty kill this season than him?
I'm pretty sure I was the one that said he was the MVP of the Leafs season.
There's a humble brag.
I have to get those once in a while. But no. I mean, you look at – I think the same goes for Cam Talbot in Edmonton. I mean – your goalie has to be your best penalty killer. There's been times where that hasn't been the case for the Leafs. I mean, given what they've put out in net. And I think Reimer was not too bad on the penalty kill, but he wasn't playing at the level that Anderson is playing at on the penalty kill. So when he stops, I think he stopped 7 shots tonight on the power play or on the penalty kill. Like those things matter. And if your goalie is not making those saves for you, and well, one of those saves came from Riley on the goal line. I don't know if you guys caught that one.
That was incredible.
He gave Riley some props on that one. So when you have a goalie that's, you know, you're confident behind, you know, to help you on the penalty kill, it makes a big difference. And right now he is that difference for the Leafs. And even if they don't have great penalty killers, or I mean, their strategy is very aggressive. You notice a lot of the chances are coming from the perimeter. They're not coming in the slot. They do a really good job boxing the guys out. And yeah, he's been a major difference this year, especially on special teams for the penalty kill.
Well, the Predators outshot the Leafs 30-17 tonight. And we saw in the power play, especially in the third period there, Frederik Andersen, you could say he stole the game with how well he played tonight. Fair to say?
Especially the third period. I mean, they were outshot 13-2. So, yeah, he definitely did. He had to make some scrambling saves. But you think in his first start back after he was injured, you make it easier on the guy. But he's been doing this all season long. And when he is on his game, the Leafs are the team they are. When he's not, the Leafs are a team that has flaws, and you see it. But he's able to keep the guys steady, and that's all you can ask for from him.
Okay, transitioning away from the Great Dane and special teams and all that good stuff from tonight's game, we had some news during the first intermission from the Bob Father himself. TSN's Bob McKenzie said that the Leafs are trying to work out a 7-year extension with Nikita Zaitsev. If you want to compare that to other contracts out there, you're looking at guys like Roman Josi. What do you guys think about this deal? Thoughts on it? Is it too much term? That's something that people are already saying. I know it's not finalized yet, but too much term. AAV is reportedly $4.5 million. Give me your guys' thoughts on it.
Well, Jake was the first to kind of mention he would give Zaitsev a 7-year or 7 years if you're able to keep the cap lower. I mean, he's 25 years old. This is not a guy who's going into his 30s, or you know, a guy like if we're looking at like Kevin Shattenkirk, who's going, you know, when he gets his contract, it's going to be pushing him into his late 30s. When Zaitsev is done, his contract will take him until he's 32. So you're paying him for his good years. These are going to be his good years. They're clearly confident with what they've seen from him this season. Him and Raleigh have taken a lot of the defensive responsibilities against the best players. And, you know, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. He's had a bit of a rough stretch, but it hasn't been to the point where he's fully collapsed and lost all confidence. And I think just having that experience in the KHL really helps. And yeah, I mean, giving him 7 years is always a risk. I mean, we've seen the Leafs give long-term contracts to guys, and it doesn't work out. But this managing group has a way better sense of who deserves a long-term contract and who can get the short-term deals. Like the Kadri one, Jake, you mentioned, is also one I think it's going to pan out better, especially with the cap hopefully going to go up soon.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what you're basically looking at is like value. And, you know, at that number, I wouldn't say it's value, but I would say he definitely has the opportunity to become a better player than what he's paid at right now, or what he's going to be paid at. You know, $4 million, I believe, or $4.5 million is, I'm pretty sure it's in the 56th in terms of overall money spent on a defenseman. And right now, I think he's a top four defenseman, no doubt about it. You know, I would have no problem. I said before, if they send him to a 4-year, $5 million a year deal, I'd have no problem with it. So, I mean, you know, obviously Bob said that, you know, it's give or take $250K. We're hoping it's 4.25, not 4.75. But, you know, I think that's just kind of the going rate for top four defensemen nowadays, because you know, he's a really, really good defenseman. He's probably been the second best defenseman for the Leafs behind, I'd say, Jake Gardner. I know some people love Morgan Riley, but he hasn't had a great year. And, I mean, that's pretty good value for a defenseman. He's pretty much slotted in what Gardner makes. And Gardner, as some people believe, he could be a top-pairing defenseman. And, you know, you look forward, and obviously the U.S. TV deal's coming up soon. And they're also selling rights to China, as we saw. Yeah. So they're going to be making some money off of that. And with the U.S. TV deal coming up, I could see the cap in the next 5 years reaching up to $90, $95 million range. And when you're at that point, you know, $4 million of 90 is not that much. I mean, you got a 22-man roster. It makes sense to me. I think it's all about the value, and I think obviously it's a little long. It's a risk, but for a Leafs team that has legitimately zero defensemen, it's a risk worth taking for sure.
Well, I think what they're really hoping for, when I butchered the comparisons at the beginning there, was you're hoping he's going to be like a Roman Josi. Roman Josi signed a 7-year, $28 million deal, so very similar to what the Leafs are hopefully going to do with Zaitsev here by the sounds of it. And we see what he is now. He's worth way more than the $4 million a year. And if you're the Leafs, you kind of hope that that's what it turns into. Do you guys feel that his ceiling could be anything close to, let's say, a Josi-type player? Maybe not like him, but similar.
I think what you have to be careful of, and I've heard guys like when Gaudreau and Monahan got their deals, Burke said they're trying very hard to do more than what their deal is instead of playing for what they're paying them for, which is to be the players that they've always been. So I think with Zaitsev, the important thing to remember is we don't want to go overblown with expectations, him getting too caught up in that, and then his performance drops. I mean, I guess the other terrible comparison you can make is when they said that they signed David Clarkson to be a third-line winger, yet they pay the guy over $5 million, so I don't know where that logic comes in. Thank you, Dave Poulin. But, that's the type of stuff you really have to be careful with, is if you're paying him $4.5 million, you say, we want you to play at the $4.5 million range that we know you're capable of, not to expect you to go over and beyond. If he plays over and beyond, that's great, but you know what you're going to get from him being a $4.5 million defenseman, because you've seen it.
Jake, you said no when you brought up Roman Josi. I'm not saying he's to be the same, but anywhere in that ballpark. What do you think his ceiling is then?
I mean, the reason I said no is because I think Roman Josi is a guy that can legitimately get Norris votes. I mean, he's a bona fide number one defenseman in the NHL. He can get you up to 60 points a season, and I just don't see that. You know, before this year started, I thought that Nikita Zaitsev would be a guy that would get you, you know, 7 goals, you know, 23 to 25 assists, get you 30, 32 points. Obviously, he's exceeded that right now, and you know, he's played a lot of games this past year. He kind of looks – there was a time there where it looked like he was kind of running down. But for a guy that can get you up to 45 points, which I think his ceiling would be, maybe a 5 goals, 40 assists, he reminds me of like a Thomas Cabrera, a guy that's not going to – that's pretty good defensively. He can skate. He doesn't look like he's a great skater, but he's got pretty good recovery speed with regards to the way he can get back on defense. And he's a guy that offensively, he surprisingly chips in. I mean, you don't really notice him because he doesn't have that big booming shot like a Shea Weber or a PK Subban. But he gets pucks through, and he gets pucks that get tipped. I mean, you saw the goal tonight that JVR scored. That was off of a Nikita Zaitsev wrist shot. He's a guy that no matter what, he's getting the puck through. He's not like a Cody Franzen where he's either shooting it through the net or it's 50 miles wide. And that's
he's very smart.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me. You know, he's a big, smart guy, and I think he's slotted correctly at that. You know, I said before I wanted about $4 million, but obviously his agent knows where the cap is going to be, and he squeezed it out. But for me, with the Leafs getting cost certainty on a top four defenseman for the next 7 years is good value. And I think, you know, when we're going to be signing some of our bigger players – like a Matthews in 2 years, a Marner in 2 years, a Nylander next offseason, it's going to look like a pretty shrewd move considering those guys are going to be getting $7 million plus.
Well, yeah, you look at Kadri's contract, for example, and that tells you value of cost certainty, right?
Exactly. I mean, you got him locked up for 5 more years, Riley 5 more years. It's all worth it. You know, you obviously have to find your way to save, you know, $250,000 there, $500,000 there. I mean, I was trying to think of what Nazem Kadri would be worth on the open market. I think he might be worth about $6 million.
Yeah, I was going to say $6 as well.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase this then to you guys, to both of you. What kind of performance would Zaitsev have to give on a year-to-year basis to make this contract worth it?
Pretty much what he's giving right now.
Yeah. I would say at least, if you're looking for offensive numbers, I say at least close to 40 points. If like we're 40 points is like the offensive, and then on the defensive end, you know, at least what he's doing about 20 minutes a night, and then playing on the PK. So, yeah, he's more relied on for his defensive play than his offensive play, but the offense is he's doing a pretty good job with that. So, yeah.
So with Zaitsev potentially locked up for the next 7 years, I think it's pretty safe to say his deal is going to get done at some point.
Yeah.
Does this alter the Leafs' approach this offseason in terms of searching for another right-handed shot defenseman, or are they just going to stay put and be extremely patient now?
Well, I think you're looking at maybe a trade for another one that can maybe be. I mean, no team is giving up a top pairing defenseman, but if you can get, you know, we keep circling back to the Ducks, and I think a lot of teams are just going to be circling them like sharks for one of their defensemen. If you can get one of those guys and hope they can, you know, add to the nucleus of this young team, that's what you try to do first. I don't know if the free agency is, you know, we already talked about the crap that's in the free agency market, and there's not much to be had there. So I think the trade route is where they're going to go, and I think they like what they have on the left side, projecting with Dermott and Nielsen eventually, and you heard Backhawk talk about that. So that's, I think, where the plan is right now, is I think a trade for the right side, it makes sense, and I think they like Carrick too, so I think they're just looking for one more guy to add to that spot.
Jake, you feel the same way with that?
I honestly think they're going to add two guys. I mean, as you guys saw this earlier in the game, you know, Craig Button obviously made a little noise by putting together some players that he think the Leafs could get in the offseason, guys like a Carl Osner or a Michael Stone. And, you know, I think the only
thing...
Don't
forget Derek Ryan. He put Derek Ryan there, too.
I don't even know who that is, so...
He's a center for Carolina.
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
I mean, the guy probably can't skate, so I don't know why that makes sense. But, I mean, you know, I personally think they have to add two defensemen, because you're obviously probably going to replace one of Hunwick and Polak, and or maybe even both. And obviously Alexei Marchenko's not the savior. I mean, no. I didn't think we thought that. So they have to get a brand new bottom two in some respect. Maybe you can push Carrick down, but I would try and find a top, like a bottom six defenseman and a top four defenseman. And there's many ways of doing that. You could sign one of them, but I think you definitely have to trade for the other. And I wouldn't be shocked if they give up one of their glut of prospects or one of the many picks that they have as well.
Okay, that's kind of like an off-season discussion. We're definitely going to talk about at length again. I know we talked about it a lot this season, but it is the main storyline leading into the off-season. As of right now, though, you just mentioned prospects. Kasperi Kapanen got called up recently, debuted on Tuesday night there when they played the Panthers. Craig Button and them said they weren't sure about whether he, you know, was going to fit in long-term with this team because he's not consistent enough yet at this level. A lot of talk about that. Where do you guys see him fitting in with this roster for this season and for the future? Starting with this season, though.
I think, depending on what, you know, what happens with... I think they make the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a part of the roster going into the playoffs, because I think, you know, Backhawk doesn't seem to be wanting to put Levo, or, you know, Levo's not in Soshnikov. I don't know. I guess maybe they're legitimately injured, or unless they're going to get back in, I think Kapanen has a chance to stay up. But at the same time, they might want to just keep him in with the Marlies and give him that chance to play top-line minutes in the playoffs, because the AHL playoffs is no joke. Like, it's a very tough competitive playoff, so he might actually benefit more from playing top-line minutes there, so that next season he's... And before we talk about next season, he's probably going to make the roster next season. I can't see... The way I've seen him play, and I've seen him play live with the Marlies twice already, he's... I mean, I don't know where... Just looking at what I've seen from him, he's much more detailed in how he's with his back check and his defensive reliability, and offensively he's been moving the puck well, and he can create space for himself, and he has a pretty good shot, and he can get some good chemistry with some with his line mates. I mean, Seth Griffith has been pretty good for the Marlies, and I think Kapanen is a big reason why. So I say a chance he makes the playoff roster, but I think if Leafs management wants to focus more on his development, then he goes back with the Marlies and plays top line minutes there.
Well, here, Jake, who's a better fit on the penalty kill? Because that's what really matters for Mike Babcock. That's a big reason why Leivel's not playing. And I know you could say he's injured right now, but before that, he just said, you know, he can't kill penalties and he's the odd man out. So who's more valuable to the Leafs penalty kill come the playoff time, Kapanen or Soshnikov?
I think Kapanen's a better player, so I would say Kapanen. I mean, I'm a big fan of Soshnikov, but he had a really good end of the year last year, and he just kind of has, you know, fallen off. He hasn't played up to where I thought he would be. Maybe it's where he's slotted in the lineup. I'm not really sure, but overall, I've always said this, that I think Kapanen's a better player than him, and it looks like he's ready. I mean, he's played pretty well. I don't like where he's slotted. I don't really think he kind of fits on that line in terms of a skill level, but I think he's a really good penalty killer, and because he has that speed. I know Soshnikov's a pretty quick player, but you know, I just think the overall he's just, if not better than Soshnikov at, you know, every aspect, he's just the overall better player for me, and whether it be that he's injured or healthy, I would play him over Soshnikov, but I don't know about Leivo, because I think Levo's a pretty good bona fide NHL player, but Mike doesn't, and that's the guy that makes the decisions.
And well, that's not what Mike said, though. Mike said he just can't kill penalties. He said that's the biggest thing holding him back, because he can't play the
penalty. But what we've seen is that Mike, obviously, he sat him for I don't know how long it was, but he obviously isn't a big fan of him, and he isn't a big believer in his abilities, because why else would he have benched him for guys like Smith or whatever? What's his name?
I don't even Ben Smith.
Yeah, Ben Smith. Like, it makes no sense. He's horrible. It upsets me that he's on the he's on the roster.
Well, you don't buy the penalty kill narrative then, because every time that he's asked about Leivo or a player like that, he just cites right away, can't kill penalties, can't take face-offs. It's something like that, always right away.
And yeah, Kapanen, I mean, he's got tonight, his little built-in excuses.
Kapanen played 309 in the penalty kill tonight, so, I mean, that tells you what right there. Long-term, you guys see him as a top six forward. I think that's pretty unanimous.
Yeah.
I think he's a third-line player, personally.
Really?
I think he's a guaranteed third-line player. I think he kind of reminds me of like a Connor Brown of where I think his ceiling is, maybe like 45, 50 points. He's not in like the class of like a Nylander or someone like that. He's not like a guaranteed player, but you know, I kind of agree with Craig Button where he is a little bit inconsistent in his play, and it's kind of annoying to watch because he's so talented, but he still is going to be an NHL player for sure. Like I don't know what like O'Sullivan is talking about, where he thinks his career's on the line for a kid that just turned 20 years old. But he's definitely an NHL player, but he has to consistently be there with his effort defensively. And based on what I've seen the past two games, it looks like he's getting there.
Well, I think the thing that bothers a lot of people, and not to sound like Don Cherry here, is that he comes off soft sometimes, where you see him, it's not that he's not giving effort, he's just not willing to do the things that you would like to see a guy do in that kind of third or fourth line role. You know, get dirty, hit guys. Sure, he kills penalty kills, but a lot of what he does in the PK comes from his speed and his ability to close shooting gaps, to basically bear down on guys when they have the puck. Like his speed is another level, especially his closing speed. So I think that's why he gets a bad rap. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a gifted skater. He might be the best skater of all the Leafs prospects outside of Matthews. I mean, he's that good of a skater, and he's that fast. I mean, as you said, if you guys didn't catch the joke that Brian Boyle and Matt Martin said, they said, finally, Babs gave us a player that could keep up with us as kind of a joke. But, I mean, he's a really talented player, and especially gifted as a skater, too.
No, yeah, he's a gifted player, and I guess maybe where Craig and the other guys see the problem is maybe it's just not there all the time in the effort. But, no, I think he's... And I agree with Jake. I think he can be a solid contributor on the third line, and I think that's where you. I think you just have to temper expectations. I think that's what they were trying to do, and you can't get too hyped up on how he's scoring in the AHL, and because I mean the AHL and NHL are just two totally different leagues. So we just have they just want to keep it at bay there in that regard.
Okay, shifting gears a bit. Something else that was mentioned this week as well was Mike Babcock and the way he impacts potential free agents in Toronto.
Oh, yes.
It's no secret a lot of veteran players perhaps are not the biggest fan of Babcock, although that's subjective. Do you really think that that's going to be an issue in the offseason? Or do you think that players that want to come here, they're just going to come here? And the veterans that don't want to play for him because they're scared of Robidoux Island or how tough Babcock can be, like, basically, do you buy this whole Babcock deters veterans from coming to Toronto narrative?
I think when we look at that, I think we were, I don't know, we're referring to what Chris Chelios said earlier this week, but I mean, when you're looking at the guys they've had to convince going in, you know, they've had to convince some guys to waive no trade clause to come to Toronto. And we've seen other guys refuse to waive no trade clause, Valtteri Filppula being the recent one. So I think that's where the whole Robidoux Island scare comes into play, but that's less Babcock and more management. When it comes to free agency, I think guys want to play for Babcock. They see that the system, if they work hard enough and they just do what they're supposed to be doing, they will succeed. I mean, you look at guys that maybe would not excel on other teams, excel with Babcock. I mean, would Hyman and Brown be as good of players if they weren't playing for the Leafs? Playing with Connor, I was about to say Connor McDavid. I have McDavid on my mind for some reason, but having Austin Matthews play with them does help. But I don't think they would be as effective if they weren't playing in the Leafs system. That could be debated, but I mean, I think that helps, and I think other players will see that. I think Chelios is just probably a little salty with how things were in Detroit with him and Babcock, and all these people giving Babcock praises, maybe getting to his it's not to his liking right now.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing kind of like stinks to me. I mean, they were kind of talking about it on TSN a bunch, and you know, he just kind of sounds like bitter the whole time. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a known fact that he's a guy that, you know, played until he was 47, and he was benched during their cup run when they won. And, you know, he kind of sounds like he hasn't really gotten over it. I mean, you know, I don't really see what the problem was, because they won a title and he has a ring, so, you know, he can go cry with his ring on. But, I mean, to me, it kind of sounds like a little sour grapes, but I think there definitely is a little truth to the fact that, you know, maybe players don't exactly love playing for him. Maybe veterans, guys that, you know, don't like the fact that he's so hard on everyone and he rarely gives credit to players. Like, obviously, we've seen that with Nylander. I mean, Nylander is probably one of the top five rookies in the league, and he's hard on him like he's a bottom four player. He's like, he's not good defensively. He tries to keep egos in check because he has a big ego, and that's the type of guy he is. And I mean, I don't have a problem with it. You know, it clearly, if a guy doesn't want to sign here because he thinks he's going to work him too hard, then I don't want him on my team anyway. So I mean, that's just what I think. But yeah, I don't really buy into that whole logic that they just don't want to play for him because he's too hard on players or something like that. I think it's a whole crock of shit. So
I agree with that, because you look at some of the guys over the years, veterans that have played for him eventually or tend to love him for the most part. Like, it's no secret, when Babcock likes a guy, he will go to war for that guy. I mean, look at Zach Hyman. I know he's a young guy, he's not a veteran, but he's not going nowhere because Babcock loves him. So I think that it's kind of a bit overblown. I agree with you guys that Chelios just sounds very bitter. Like, do you guys think the Robidoux Island has impacted the way veterans view the Leafs?
Yes.
That it's more of like they're scared of it now?
Well,
I do, for sure. How wouldn't it?
It definitely would scare me, but at the same time, there's a reason why they're scared. It's because the Leafs are basically saying, you're not good enough to play on our team. Just go and take the money that your contract has and just don't talk, or just get away from the team. So if that scares you, and as Jake, and I like what you said there, Jake, was if that scares a player, then the Leafs don't want that player.
So, no, I don't want a guy that thinks he can just coast through the season. And I mean, also for me, I just don't think a coach has that big an impact on a free agent signing. I mean, yeah, maybe you're talking about like on a list of things that would probably be fifth for me. First for me is money, obviously. If the Leafs are offering you $8 million and the next team's offering $7 million, you're signing with the Leafs. I mean, that's just the way it's just dollars and cents. It makes sense. No pun intended. But
it makes dollars make sense, right?
Exactly. And also, next, you're thinking about winning. If this team is on the trajectory where it possibly can be in the years moving forward, you're not going to turn them down if money is somewhat the same because you're like, hey, I don't want this coach to grind me down. Another thing is, you know, it's a city. Would you rather play in Arizona where you get 3,000 fans and nobody talks to you? Or would you rather play for a team that actually has a chance to win and people care what you're doing? I mean, it's a whole thing. A mentality for me, and you know, also, you know, fan base, you know, quality of life, how, what your role is going to be, the players you play with. I'd care more about the players I'm playing with over the coach who's coaching me, because, you know, obviously that's the thing that people have been saying the whole time, you know, coaches or players last longer than coaches. You know, obviously we wholeheartedly know that Babs is going to be here probably for 7 years, but yeah. If I'm a talented winger, like a guy like a TJ Oshie, I'm way more excited at the fact that I could be playing with Austin Matthews and William Nylander as opposed to being coached by a guy that might be a little too hard on me. The whole thing, it never made sense to me, and it sounded like a weak argument too. Like how many really good veteran players have the Detroit Red Wings signed? They've signed tons.
Well, yeah, they were a veteran team. But I think we can really sum up what Toronto is trying to do with one word: culture. They're literally just trying to build a culture, and they're trying to get rid of all the pessimism that we hear certain fans bring up still today, where they go, you know, take for example, the Leafs are going to blow this playoff run. That's still a narrative that's out there amongst the fan base because the culture has just been shit for years, and it's riddled in their minds that, you know, this is the way things are. And Babcock, Shanahan, Lamoriello, even this roster, for example, they're determined to break that and change it. So I think everything we see them doing is all going towards building a new culture in Toronto and one that's going to have long-term success. Looking at the remaining games on the schedule, obviously the playoff run is extremely tight. The Leafs are two points behind the Ottawa Senators. So home ice is not out of the question. They could finish second in the Atlantic, which is mind-boggling. I would have never guessed this at the beginning of the season. If somebody told me this, I would have told them to kindly go fly something.
As I said before, if they hadn't lost as many games in the shootout, this wouldn't have been a problem.
Oh, that's the story of the season, man, is how the Leafs could have finished higher if they didn't lose all these games.
They would be the top team in the Atlantic.
100%.
Probably.
However, there are 7 games left. We can kind of prognosticate a little bit right now. They got at Detroit, at Buffalo, Washington at home, Tampa, Pittsburgh, Columbus, all at home. Fair to say, guys, that 3-3-1 gets them in the playoffs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think they win 3 games they're in. I think if they win these next 2 at Detroit and I believe who are they playing on Monday?
Buffalo.
At Buffalo. If they win at Buffalo and at Detroit, I think they're in. Jeez. Not the 3 seed, but I think they're in the playoffs because, you know, there's just such a gap between them and teams like Carolina who are somehow still winning. And Tampa Bay, I mean, what are they? They're like 4 points back, I believe. So they pretty much have to win out to catch the Leafs. And yeah, I know teams like Carolina, they haven't lost in 13 games in regulation. But it's just such a tall task. It would be pretty epic downfall if they didn't qualify, if they win their next 2 games. I think you could pretty much just slap an X over there. Oh, next to them in the standings if they win the next 2 games.
Well, just to give you a breakdown, the Leafs are currently at 89 points. It was the 6 games in hand, sorry, not 7. So
they said 93 would get it.
I was just going to say that. 93 would get it, so meaning if they win 2, that puts them right there. If Tampa wins out, that puts them at 97. Yeah, that's if they win out. If Carolina wins out, they're at 96.
Yeah.
So basically the Leafs just got to play .500 hockey.
Yeah, I say they win 2 games, they're in. But, yeah, obviously you're trying to win as many games as possible, so those games against Pittsburgh and Columbus mean nothing. You're hopefully just chilling there and you can rest some players that are banged up. And, you know, if worse comes to worse, you're playing for seeding against Ottawa, who looks like they could be in some trouble if Erik Karlsson's out a decent amount of time.
Yeah, that could be something really dangerous there. I mean, they didn't say how long or how bad it is. All they said was that he blocked a shot on his leg and he's out.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. And Tampa's last remaining games, Montreal, Dallas, Boston, Leafs, Montreal, Buffalo. So
that's manageable.
Yeah.
For them?
It's manageable for them, but they've had some real stinkers too. So if they get Stamkos back, Kucherov, I know he missed tonight's game, but Drouin's been playing out of his mind, so.
Yeah, you know who's sick is Drouin. Did you see the goal he scored? Oh. Jesus Christ. He walked Boston through the whole team. Oh, there it is. I think it's Toronto-Boston. It's going to come down to the end, but I just see Boston getting in. If I'm Washington and I see Tampa Bay make it, though, I am terrified.
Right? Well, Boston's got Florida at home, at Chicago, Tampa, Ottawa, Washington at home to close out.
That game at Tampa is going to decide the playoffs for me.
Okay. I was literally just going to say that.
Yeah. Whoever wins that game is going to make the playoffs because that's a 4-point swing.
What's most important here? We all three agree that the Leafs are making the postseason.
That's pretty much a lot. Yeah. I think they're at 90% or something absurd.
Yeah, 92 point something, if you want to get like specific. But, Dave, I think I heard you say yeah in the background. You agree?
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is the one time where I'll go out on the neck and say yes. I can guarantee the Leafs will make it.
Okay, so you heard it here first. Tip of the Tower is telling you that the Leafs are making the postseason. And on that note, we're going to finish before we get ran over by criticism here. But I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of the Toronto Maple Leafs podcast brought to you by tipofthetower.com. As always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Tip of the Tower. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal Kranitz. You can follow Jake on Twitter at JakeMiddleton12. You can follow Dave on Twitter at D_Morisuti. And guys, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes or SoundCloud, also at Tip of the Tower. Feel free to leave us a review, rate the show. We love hearing all the feedback. You can reach out to us anywhere on social media or through the feedback app there. We appreciate it. Enjoy the stretch run here, guys. We'll be back next week to talk more Leafs and hopefully about who the Leafs are going to play. Until then, take care.
William Nylander.
The Knights, Mitch Marner.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.